when do you start your term?
January 1st. As managing partner? Yes, January 1st.
But you folks are the largest, is that right?
It's always been... We're the largest firm within the boundaries of the state. We don't have offices outside of the state. We actually, our only office now is in Honolulu. We at one time had an office in Kona. Mm-hmm. But the senior partner who was in charge there passed away prematurely, and after that we decided not to maintain that office. So within the state, we're the largest. There's one firm that has offices outside the state, too. I think they still do. So the total number...
Yeah, they used to have that.
Mexico.
They had the. Remember when they merged in the early 90s with.
Paul Smith Ball. I haven't really kept up. Yeah. I assume they still have some offices outside.
I would be surprised.
If they do, then they would be larger from that point of view. But within the state, yeah, we're still the largest.
So what's the hardest part? What are the biggest challenges of running, looking at your sort of eclectic group?
Yeah, I think that, well, for one thing, and I think this is probably true of any law firm, a large law firm. Managing partners in law firms usually also maintain practices. So I'm adding managerial duties on top of my law practice, which is a busy one. And I also do, I have a lot of outside not-for-profit community activities as well. So one of the biggest challenges, really, I think, for anyone who does this is managing time. Other than that, I think it's probably the same. I've managed other organizations in the past when I was a government official. So I've had some management experience. And I think that to some extent here, since I'm just started it, maybe I'm not entirely sure what all the challenges will be. But part of it is that it's a complex organization. Lawyers are, a law firm is unique in the sense that a lot of the lawyers, the partners, were all owners, and so we're all on equal footing. Associates are also lawyers who have, in many cases, with respect to clients, equal responsibilities with partners, certainly the more senior. So lawyers are very independent. They are charged with protecting the interests of clients, which makes them very vigorous in terms of how they look at things. So you can't just make a recommendation to a lawyer. I think the training is that you have to prove your case. We don't take much on faith, and that's how we're trained, really, which is how we serve clients. So I think as a manager, you've got to keep that in mind. And so if you want to go in certain directions to do certain things, you're going to have to really do homework to show your partners that this really makes sense. I think that's probably one of the biggest challenges. But other than that, at the same time, this is a very collegial firm. People work together very cooperatively. It's one of the fun things about being here that I've always enjoyed. And so, I think in terms of relationships, I think that part isn't
earlier. I'm somewhat familiar with this law firm, Dave Dazzani, for many years. I was a First Amendment lawyer for the Star Bulletin when I was there. And he and Peggy,
I did a little bit of work, too. I actually represented one of your writers, I forget his name now, tall thin guy.
Lee Catterall.
Yeah, I represented Lee in district court on an animal rights case where he had notes, this fellow had mistreated dogs. And do you remember that case?
Oh, this is a while ago right now. Dave's, I've done a lot of work with Dave. I was the troublemaker down there. It was a lot of fun.
Those are interesting cases.
They were good. How do you balance? You were talking about time constraints. How do you balance all of that? Pretty much on a whole bunch of boards right now.
I am. It's challenging. I spend a lot of time working. I put in very long hours. A key, honestly, though, this might seem trite, but it really isn't. My staff is amazing. And they are very loyal, they're very competent, they're just dedicated. They understand what client needs are, so my clients are able to get service from us even if I'm not here. And a lot of times, because of my schedule, I'm not here. So, I think in order to do something, I wouldn't have done this if I didn't have that kind of staff. They really are exceptional. That really makes it possible, because otherwise it just would be too much. So, you know, you have to be organized, and we are. They are, anyway. Very well organized, so they really... There has to be somebody here to manage things. Frankly, one of the things that makes it possible is technology. A lot of the work that I do, especially during a legislative session, requires me to be at the Capitol, and there's a lot of dead time. And technology allows me to keep in touch with clients and my staff, so that, you know, this morning would be a good example. I sat in a hearing today for 2 hours. Most of that time didn't involve me at all. I probably did 30, 40 messages during that time. I mean, I couldn't have done that in the old days. And that, you know, that allows me to make better use of my time.
You just used a...
BlackBerry.
You do the BlackBerry thing.
Yeah, you know, it's a great device, and it does. It has its disadvantages because you're always connected. But on the other hand, it does allow you to make much better use of your time. And, you know, as a result, it makes it easier to be able to do more things. And I enjoy those other things, especially the, you know, a lot of the nonprofit stuff I do. But I enjoy that. I don't want to do that
more. You mentioned you were at one time at a state agency.
Yeah, I was. I was the director of the State Ethics Commission.
Oh, okay.
In the early '70s. Then, no, actually the mid-70s. I worked for the Legislative Reference Bureau in the early '70s. Then when Eileen Anderson was mayor, do you remember that?
Yeah.
I don't think Lee is. I was corporation counsel when Eileen Anderson was mayor. Mm-hmm. And then, and that would immediately follow being the director of the Ethics Commission. When Eileen was defeated.
Talk about your staff. How does it, what are the challenges of keeping your staff motivated? And plus, it's swamped during legislative season, especially keeping track of everything. It's just a pretty Herculean task.
Well, partly with my staff, actually, they like being busy. So I think the challenge of, and we do, I mean, we're involved in interesting issues, and I have interesting clients. And so I think that's stimulating. Also, we work as a team. We really do. I mean, everybody is really an equal member of that team. Everybody has input. I rely upon them for advice. So, you know, we reached conclusions about strategies and how to handle things in a team way. So everybody participates, and so I think it makes it exciting for everybody. I mean, I think by nature they're just extremely dedicated, conscientious people. And I think in a law firm, one of the things that is a little bit unique is that the mission of a law firm has to be protection of the interests of the clients. I mean, a client puts their security in your hands in a lot of ways similar to the way a person puts their health in the hands of a doctor. I mean, there's an enormous amount of trust that goes on there because people have a limited ability to really know how capable the professionals they work with are. I mean, that's just, that puts a lot of responsibility on those professionals. And then we've been in the firm as a whole. I mean, I think that's been one of the reputations we've had as part of the tradition of the firm. And I think most lawyers understand that, but I think those things, when you add all those things together, I think it puts a lot of motivation. And, you know, we also enjoy doing the work. You know, we try to create an environment in which people have fun as well.
That helps, I take it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it does. I mean, I think.
How do you do that?
I try to keep things like, well, you know, I'm somewhat of a practical joker, and I try to, you know, keep things light in that way. Because it's very serious work and very difficult, but you have to have some fun while you're doing it, because if you don't, it's very hard and very stressful work. But we kid around a lot at the same time.
How much of your work is divided? Is it, I mean, do you do some business litigation? Or lobbying?
Personally?
Yeah.
Well, my work has developed into almost exclusively government-related. Okay. All my work has some government connection. It's split up. During the session, a lot of it is focused on the legislature. But we also work with agencies for all kinds of clients. Costco is one of my clients, for example. So we work with them.
Kauai, for instance.
Kauai. Yeah, as an example, you know, exactly. Helping them on getting their entitlements and other permits, and helping also to coordinate projects, and just interfacing with, you know, government government agencies. We do a lot of work. Campaign Spending Commission, helping to advise clients with the campaign spending law, and working with the commission and resolving questions and issues and that sort of thing. So it's a wide range of activities that involve the government. Because having worked for the government, I get a feeling for how government people look at issues and what government requirements are.
Regulatory side, there's just no end. Either boom market, or like today.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Clients are always going to have to work with us.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think in my experience, I've been doing this at Goodsonoff for 20 years, and obviously the economy has had, in that time, a long down period. Mm-hmm. It's certainly busier the last couple of years with the economy being better, because there are more people trying to do business, and so whenever you want to do business, you're likely to come within the scope of government. It's also true that during down periods, so the difference in our practice between the down periods and busy periods isn't as great as, say, real estate, for example. Because there's always a certain amount of government regulation. And actually, the number of people in Hawaii who do this work and have had the government experience that I've had, and there are people in the firm that work with me, and it's relatively small. So I think most of us who do this, we've kept, consistently busy.
Is there any difference between, let's say, this is our first Republican administration versus previous?
Actually, no. On the regulatory side, I'd say no, because the fact is that most work in government really carried out by the professionals who've been there over the years. Again, I was on that side. I was the head of two government agencies and worked a lot with a lot of government agencies in the work that I did, because the Ethics Commission had regulatory authority over all state agencies, state employees. And as corp counsel, you've got responsibility for all the city. You kind of see how people work. And the professionals who do it day-to-day, they're the ones that have the expertise. And I think that while a governor and department heads obviously have their role to play in terms of making policy, they can't consistently be in a position of overruling what staffs are doing. One, the staffs have a level of expertise that a governor and department heads have to acquire from working with those very folks. So since under our civil service system, and even for those employees who are exempt, and they tend to be there over long periods of time, and so those are the folks that you're dealing with. So even with a new governor or a new mayor, new mayors come in, you find that you're dealing with the same people over and over again, and it is at the middle management levels that most work gets done and most of the decisions are really made.
Is that the same with legislation?
I think that there's some difference in the sense that with a Republican governor and a Democratic legislature, you've got some difference in philosophy, so there probably are somewhat more differences between the administration and the legislature in terms of policy. But as an individual lobbyist working for clients, you're primarily working through the legislative process with legislators anyway. So I don't think you see that much effect. You might see some slight differences in terms of what government agencies might say about something you're working on. Perhaps under a Democratic governor, they'll take different positions on some issues than others. But a lot of the issues we work on don't directly impact those agencies anyway. In a lot of cases, even when they do, you don't see that much difference. So I think day to day for most of us, there isn't a dramatic difference because of the Republican governor.
Work in state aid, help you today.
Having worked there?
Yeah, having worked here. No, help you today in managing
managing the firm.
Yeah, from an administrative standpoint. You've been a director of the department before.
Well, I think that in managing any organization, people have people are similar. Regardless of the organization you work in, people have the challenges they face, both personal and professional, in interoffice problems that can arise anywhere. So just having experience of working through problems and challenges in the government agencies where you're trying to really facilitate people being able to do their work in producing the product that that office is supposed to produce. I mean, that's basically what you're trying to do. You're trying to put people in a position to do the best they can, the most productive they can, and be the happiest they can. That's really what you're doing. And I, regardless of the office, regardless of the product, you know, that's really what a manager is trying to achieve. So having had experience doing that in the government, I think was a help. And I wasn't involved in management in the firm. We didn't have a managing partner when I first joined the firm, but I was on our management committee, so you know, I had experience, you know, working in that, even in this firm. And I found that jumping into that sooner after I joined the firm, having run those agencies, were helpful. I mean, even as a kid in school, I helped to run a coffee shop in a resort.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the same, I was a lot younger then, but a lot of the same issues are there in terms of people working in any workplace. I mean, there are certain things that are common.
When did you decide to be a lawyer? Let me turn a little social side. I mean,
When
or what?
Well,
did you get into law?
Interestingly, it wasn't something I really gave a lot of thought to. When I was in college, my first interest was being a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't able to go to summer. I couldn't afford to go to summer school where all my friends took organic chemistry. So I had to take organic chemistry with the chemistry majors, and that was impossible to ask. So that sort
of
took care of medical school. Huh?
The memorization of those formulas and molecules and O-chem.
Amazing, just amazing. So I had to work during the summers, make money. I couldn't go to summer school. My friends all went to summer school. Once we became doctors, I think I was the only one of my friends that actually took the course. So, you know, that got to me thinking about, you know, other careers, and there wasn't anything, you know, significant that occurred in my life that made me think, gee, law school. No, there really wasn't. Once I was in law school and graduated, I was fortunate, before I graduated, to come into contact with a really great lawyer in Philadelphia. I had been very involved in defending people during the McCarthy era.
Mm-hmm.
So he was a civil rights lawyer, and that was during the time of the civil rights movement and the anti-war movement. I got involved with him. That was inspiring. I mean, mm-hmm. I got to do things as a young lawyer.
This is in the 60s?
Extraordinary. Started in 1966. I graduated from law school, was thrown immediately into this, and working with people who were national figures.
You would consider him a mentor?
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he was definitely a mentor.
What was his name?
His name was Harry Levitan.
I'm not sure.
I've lost contact with him in recent years, but I still never met anybody finer. I mean, just an extraordinary individual with a wonderful sense of humor, but just absolutely dedicated to representing people who were oppressed, and it was inspiring to get to do that work. So that kind of got me started in seeing a side of being a lawyer that, you know, I hadn't really thought about. I mean, law school was fascinating. It's very challenging, very interesting, very scary in some cases.
Do you go to law school in Pennsylvania?
Pennsylvania, okay. Philadelphia. Came to Hawaii, had a chance to come to Hawaii, not necessarily with a sense that, you know, it'd stay, but just came in. I just, you know, I never really, I think by nature, an East Coast person, a personality.
Mm-hmm.
A high, kind of high intensity way of doing things. I also was always an outdoor person, so I never liked being stuck in the winter. So when I got here, it was just like, you know, wow, ended up staying in 1970.
As an
engineer. Yes, I was. Well,
did you?
I mean, statehood was only, I don't know, it was only 11 years past.
Yeah.
So, when I first came here, I think this was, I think about that time, the Sheridan Waikiki was under construction.
What?
The Sheridan
Waikiki
was pretty significant in the sense of such a giant structure.
Yeah.
And I had a hard time finding a job. I didn't work immediately. I had a hard time finding a job and finally found a position in the Legislative Reference Bureau. In those days, you know, there was actually a law, which was unconstitutional, but nonetheless, it was a law that made it very difficult for someone who's moved from the mainland to get a government job.
Really?
it was at that time, I think the residency requirement at that time might have been 3 years. That's a long time ago, but there was a residency
requirement. To get a state job. Wow.
And the only way you could get the job is if there were no local person available for it.
Oh.
And that was challenged later, but I was hired under the exception, because they weren't able to find, there wasn't anybody else who applied for that particular job. So it was actually with the revisor of statutes, which later became a part of the Legislative Reference Bureau.
That was a fascinating time.
Well, you know, it was. One of the reasons that I was really interested in coming here is always, when I was a young lawyer in Philadelphia, kind of by chance, I was assigned to work with government agencies because I was the youngest lawyer and nobody else wanted to do it. So they said, you go. And I enjoyed it because it's a kind of law that I really enjoy. I'm not much into, you know, confrontational approach to things. I really enjoy working things out. And a lot of the problems that, you know, clients had with government, and it's definitely still true, is a lack of understanding. I mean, the problem, you've got two sides, the government side and the private side, who often talk past each other. And so one of the challenges, and it can be very rewarding, is finding ways of getting them to understand each other. And it's, again, a lot of things that I've done and really happen, I have to admit, have happened by chance. But I really enjoyed that because clients I represented, you know, were trying to do good things. This client was actually rehabilitating old housing, which was, you know, a great project. They took these old broken down houses, got government contracts to renovate them, and then, if I remember correctly, the government would then buy them from them. So it was a great project. But there are a lot of differences of opinion about how things would be done, and so I was kind of going back and forth between them, working those things out. I really enjoyed that. And kind of what I've ended up doing ever since, because that's a lot of what, you know, I don't find many cases where I'm litigating against government agencies. Very, very rare. I don't think it serves a client's purpose to do that. It's very expensive and just get everybody angry. So, you know, the task is really to find ways of getting people to, you know, hear each other out.
Lobbying here tends to be a lot more top story versus,
yes,
you know, the mainland. It's big money. I can mention as an word, Abel.
Yeah,
but
well,
you don't have it to the extent, a little bit of extent here. I mean, you know,
yeah.
Still, in general, it tends to be, you talk to the people, and it's...
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there are different styles. I mean, for me, coming from the Ethics Commission and from the city, the approach, clearly, that, you know, we were going to take in this business was building trust, you know, doing good work, you know, being a resource. Our government here is probably a lot, and a legislative specifically, you know, a lot more accessible than most other places. My clients who come from the mainland are often really surprised by that. It's relatively easy to get to see legislators. It's not to say the process is easy, because it's not. But it's complex and it's very challenging. An awful lot of things happen in a very short period of time, which is very stressful for both legislators and people. But the legislators, nonetheless, tend, for the most part, to be very accessible. So, a lot of it is really based, you know, is based on relationships, but those relationships really come from trust over a period of time. We'll say the same thing. I haven't actually lobbied on the mainland. When I worked on the mainland, which was a relatively short time, I didn't work with the legislature, which was in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. So, I just worked primarily there, the city agencies.
They lobby on the mainland, and to some extent, politics land. A lot of it is just problem solving.
Yeah, well, that's true. And I mean, there are, of course, as in any field, sometimes you get people doing the wrong things who give professions a bad name. A lobbyist in today's world perform a critical function, though. I think that the disparity between the salaries that government can pay and what's paid in the private sector, I think, has created a problem. In that, when I first came here, the number of people who, say, could work for legislators and government agencies, people with a lot of experience, worked at the legislature because they could afford to. The salary disparities between what so the government agencies pay and what people paid in the private sector wasn't that great, but it's increased because the public hasn't really been willing to support increased government compensation. It's a struggle. But that factor doesn't apply in the private sector where, you know, things are market driven. And so I think it's made it harder for legislators to retain experienced staff. I think the staffs they have are very cooperative, they're very conscientious, but it's hard to keep people for a long time at the pay rates they have. So where the lobbyist comes in is to be able to provide information, expertise, data, in approaches that legislators are not going to have readily at hand. Now, the legislator's job is to try to decipher, you know, the good material they're getting from the bad material, which isn't always easy, but I think they develop. I mean, I think the good legislators develop the skill in doing that. But that's a function that lobbyists, you know, can provide, and when it's done on that basis, it's a valuable resource. And typically, at least on the difficult issues, legislators are getting opinions from, you know, many different points of view, sometimes from different lobbyists, sometimes from citizen groups. So, you know, it helps them to decipher the good from the bad. But the lobbyists are in a position to bring that information to bear, just monitoring the process and seeing what bills are being introduced.
Huge job.
Well, it is, and, you know,
2,000 bills each year?
We have 2,600.
Yeah.
We introduced this year 3,000 last year. Now, true, only a small percentage of them get to be bills, but an awful lot of them have to be reviewed before that process gets to the end.
They become a law. You don't know where they're going to get tucked into.
Yeah, well, we're working on the issues that we work out with clients. We review bills to see what's coming through, and then if we spot something, and other lobbyists are doing the same thing. Among all the lobbyists who are working, what you hope is that major interests in the community are being represented, because you get a major piece of legislation that could pass through very quickly if nobody is providing information on it, if nobody notices. And that does happen from time to time, but not that often, because sooner or later a lobbyist will pick it up, see it's an issue, inform a client, and then at least you get, you know, fuller debate. So without the lobbyist's role, that I think, you know, that would be lost. So the lobbyist does the job correctly, the legislation.
We can go over some of this personal stuff. Age?
60.
Born
1941.
Do we do exact date? I can't remember. Oh, let's do exact date just in case.
July 16, 1941.
Oh.
I can't remember the name of
it. Yeah, I know. Yeah, I can't remember my
name. I do know the name. I said Classical High School in Providence, Rhode Island.
His college?
Brown University. Brown University is in Providence, too.
Yeah. So. What'd you major in there?
History.
History. That's a neat school.
Yeah, it is. I graduated in 1963. I graduated from Penn in 1966.
Breakthrough job.
Probably the Ethics Commission.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that introduced me to a whole lot of people, and that directly led to my job as court counsel, because I had gotten to know Eileen Anderson, because she was head of the budget department, and naturally the Ethics
That's
Commission
right.
are dealing with money all the time, so. I got to know her, and then she picked me to be court counsel.
That's right.
So.
Nacho was one of our big backers, and he's still around.
Who?
Nacho Yoshinaga.
I saw him 2 days
he's
ago.
He's a legend.
Yeah, he was walking through the building.
He's still walking around with his baseball cap that
yeah.
right here.
And he was a power when I came to
He was one of the guys that changed the legislature in 1954, voted the Republicans out, and that was like the start of the Democratic
Well, when I, you know, when I came, I mean, the Hawaii legislature was nationally renowned. Well, I mean, in Philadelphia, I knew about the Hawaii legislature.
Very progressive at the time. They were passing a lot of, I think they slipped somewhere in the 90s.
Well, you know, I think...
That's my editorial comment, but
well,
that's
it's an
just...
interesting issue, but when I first came, the number of legislators who were older and had outside positions
mm-hmm.
was very substantial. But again, I think partly what has happened is it's gotten a... My guess is that people in the private sector from the 1970s to now are probably making, in many cases, maybe, say, four times as much income as they did then. And on the government side, legislative side, it's nowhere near that. And at some point, the financial sacrifice just gets to be too great. So, and of course, college tuitions, the cost of homes. You know, when I first...
Everything's
you think of what homes cost now? Wow. I mean, in those days when I came here, I mean, lots of people were buying houses at $20,000. Those houses are probably, most of them probably worth $1 million today. So those things make a difference, and it's much harder for people to give up careers. And so that's why I think you've got a trend toward a lot of younger legislators, a certain number of people who retired who are running for office.
Little known fact.
I'm not sure. I saw that, but I wasn't quite sure what that was supposed to mean.
It's something about your life, maybe. Well, you know, like you ran either one. You worked in a restaurant, was it?
I worked in a coffee shop.
Coffee shop.
And a resort hotel. And that was a kind of a breakthrough job, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I supervised people in that position. I had no experience.
Yeah.
Had no business supervising anybody. Mm-hmm. And we had two of us were in it. We had a lot of responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. Mentor, I think we had mentioned that.
Yeah. I'd say so.
Major
I had another, I mean, I've had two men.
Oh, yeah?
That was a mentor on the mainland. My other mentor here, without a doubt, was Dolly Chi.
Really?
Absolutely, yeah. She,
Dolly of Bank of Hawaii.
Yeah, she, when I was at the Ethics Commission, shortly after I joined the Ethics Commission, she became a member of the commission and she was chair. She was a supreme lobbyist.
Yeah,
a great
without
lobbyist.
A doubt.
I mean, she was a wonderful person and we were very close, so absolutely. In Hawaii, that was... She was my mentor/mother, I guess. As she was to many people. I was the only one.
We kind of mentioned major challenge, but I guess usually we sort of put that in a personal. We're talking about the law firm's major challenges.
I think
balancing.
Now, it's balancing all these interests and without giving up any of them, as well as, you know.
Hobbies?
My major hobby activities right now are tennis.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And
what do you play?
I'm a stereo fan.
Where do you play tennis?
I play two places, in the North Shore, where I used to live in the North Shore.
Yeah.
So I go up there on Sunday mornings at the hotel.
Oh, okay, the Turtle Bay.
Turtle Bay. Mm-hmm. And then Kailua Racquet Club.
Oh, you play Kailua? Yeah, I play at Bertania Park.
Oh, do you?
No, I've been playing leads for So, who do you play with down there?
Kailua Racquet Club?
Yeah. Who do I play with the members there?
With a relatively small group. You know, there's a class that...
Yeah.
There's a tennis coach there that I take lessons from, and he runs... they run these aerobic tennis classes.
Oh, is that... What's his name?
Willow.
Huh?
Are you thinking of Bruce Nagel?
Yeah, Nagel.
Yeah, I've taken from Bruce. Yeah, he's there too. This fellow's name is Willem Scudder. He's from South Africa. Great guy, and he's from running sporadic. It's a great... tennis is a great release because you have to concentrate on a tennis ball.
It's pretty frustrating. Mm-hmm. I've been playing since I was 18. I've been playing since I was 14.
Really?
I haven't gotten any better since
Rick, I'll tell you something.
I play with Todd Tanaka. He's
Todd.
He's
really good. Todd's a great player. If you can play with Todd, you're good. You know what I did, though? I started playing about the same time you did, I guess, in high school. I started playing. I played for years. I used to play... I play in leagues once in a while now.
Yeah.
And I actually play pretty well. I've won tournaments years ago, but never really knew how to play.
That's the good part. Then you don't screw your game up.
No, but to me, I really admire Roger Federer because the way I look at Federer is if you woke up the guy from the dead who invented tennis and he saw Roger Federer, he'd say, "That's what I meant." That's the way it's supposed to be.
He's like a bigger, taller Ken Rosewall.
I used to watch Rosewall because I had mine when I was a kid.
He was my favorite. I saw him play in the 50s.
He didn't hit
the ball hard, but he can turn from offense to defense and change it out.
I started taking lessons a couple of years ago because my knee still worked at all because I just wanted to. It's a beautiful game, and I wanted to learn how to play it correctly. You know, I wish I'd done it like 30 years ago, but so, you know, he's been trying to.
I played on a B-League team with a bunch of dysfunctional
people. Some people would say that's an oxymoron.
I had Eric Seitz on my team, and I had Turbin,
Turbin?
The Turbinator, Mr. Pushat. Yeah. There was one other, Doug Smith, who's a good trust lawyer. And a couple more lawyers on that table.
I love it, though, and that's release because you get the exercise, and I take the class, but when you have to concentrate on hitting a ball, mm-hmm. it takes your mind off everything else. Yeah. It's very release. Yeah.
Books recently read?
Most of the books, the book I read most recently is called The Life of Pi. Just somewhat related to the fact that I'm involved with the zoo.
Mm-hmm. The Life of?
The Life of Pi.
P-I-E?
P-I.
P-I. Oh, yeah. Okay. Who is that by?
Oh, I forgot his name.
Oh, look it up. Well, we probably did a lot more. We got a lot more material. We got a lot more stuff.